Yo, what's up, everybody? It's Michael Tucker with the Real Estate Success Strategies Podcast. Listen, I am so excited because today I have a very special guest. Sean Pan is with us. He is a real estate investor and hard money lender based out of San Francisco Bay area, and he invests in single family renovations as well out of state. And he actually does that out of Jacksonville, Florida. So I think it's really cool. He lives in California, but he also invests out of state. So you don't hear a lot of talk about out of state investing. And when you do, I feel like it's only done by those that know exactly what they're doing. And Sean does, but I'm just saying you only hear the talk from those sort of people. So I'm so excited to bring Sean on today. And we're going to be talking a little bit about hard money loans and a little bit about out of state investing. If you don't know who Sean is, he is the host of the Everything Real Estate Investing Show, where he brings on all sorts of real estate investors to talk just about that real estate. He talks about part of the agent's side. He brings on contractors to talk about the contracting side of the business, inspectors, everything. He does this to shed light on what they do and how you can partner with them to make your business better. So Sean, man, welcome to the Real Estate Success Strategies Podcast. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Michael.
Anytime, brother. Now, dude, I got connected with you just by finding your Instagram page. You add so much value on your Instagram and your YouTube, dude. I want to first commend you and say thank you for all the value you give out, because it's awesome what you're doing on there.
Yeah, thanks for that.
So tell me a little bit, man. Tell us, the audience, a little bit about who you are, how you got into real estate, and then we'll start our conversation here in a little while about hard money lending.
Sure. So yeah. Hi, guys. My name is Sean Pan. I'm a real estate investor based here in the Bay Area. I mostly focus on single family flips and renovations in the Santa Clara County, and I own some properties out of state based in Jacksonville, Florida. Those are like the cash flowing side. And like you mentioned, I also do work as a hard money lender over at Conventus Lending, where we help finance multifamily properties or single family rehabs, as well as some long-term rentals. So we do offer a 30-year program for these loans. I'm also the host of my podcast. I do YouTube, and I also host a meetup group where we meet up at least once a month and just talk about how real estate is going for everyone nearby.
Is that an online meetup or is that an in-person meetup?
It started as an in-person meetup, but obviously due to COVID-19, we have now shifted to the virtual world.
Awesome, man. I love it. I'll let you continue on. I just wanted to ask that.
Oh yeah. No, that's about it.
Gotcha, man. Well, I'm very interested in hearing your journey, especially the Jacksonville, Florida part of it, right? You know, how did you get involved in real estate investing in Florida when you live in California? Like, what's that look like? How'd that story unravel? And if you could just give our audience insights on how you're doing that right now.
Sure. So I started my investing journey, I would say, way back in 2011. That's when I got my first time, my first full-time job working as an engineer. So I have an engineering background, went to school for engineering. But then just working full-time, man, I realized that this was not where I wanted to be 30 years down the line. All my coworkers didn't seem content with where they were, you know, financially and professionally. And I could see myself very easily being trapped in that cycle as well. So I thought of different ways to break out of that. And so I tried many different businesses. You know, I tried selling products on Amazon. I tried writing eBooks, and nothing really stuck, but real estate made sense. And by reading a lot of books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and by going to a lot of the online forums like BiggerPockets, and even through Quora, I got really hooked on the concept of buying real estate and especially cash flowing real estate. Now the challenge was, there are how many cities in the United States, where are you supposed to invest? I had no idea where to go. And so what one very interesting post on Quora said was to just go out to your local meetups, talk to people, find out where they're investing, what are other people doing. And just by going to meetups for about a whole year, I got turned on to Jacksonville, Florida. You know, they would always post these top 10 lists of places to invest. Jacksonville is one of those cities that was consistently on those top 10 lists. And the other cities had different climates. You know, like, I'm from California. I only know sunshine and rainbows. I don't know what it's like to have properties that have snow. You know, I hear stories of water pipes bursting because of the cold temperature. I wasn't really
comfortable. You're not used to that.
Yeah, exactly. I have no idea what that's about. So anyways, Florida seemed like a good place to invest in. Jacksonville was big enough for me. They have their own NFL team. And yeah, the numbers made sense in terms of a price to rent ratio. So when I finally came down to it, I just decided that was a place I was going to go to. I created my team. We started looking for properties, made the purchase, and it's been going pretty well since then.
I love it, man. And everything you're talking about, well, one, I can relate to you so well, right? If you know my journey at all, if you're listening and you know me, you know I tried everything and anything to make a dollar before real estate, you know, eBay drop shipping, stock trading, the whole nine yards. So I really relate to you in that sense. And it's cool because everything you're saying, you built a team, you know, you evaluated the market, everything you're saying is like the basis for if you want to start investing in real estate. You have to do all these things. You know, you need to evaluate your market, build the team, you know, you have to do the due diligence. So man, I love that aspect of it. So how did you go from, you know, figuring out where you wanted to invest to actually getting that first deal in Jacksonville? Because I'm sure you built your team, but how do you go about finding properties when you live 3 days away, if you're driving, right? 3 days away, probably what, 12 hour flight away from Jacksonville, something like that. How do you go about actually getting that first property?
Yeah, I would say the most important and probably the hardest part is actually finding the team. Because once you have your team, the property is pretty easy. It's all about just the numbers and trusting that your team knows what they're talking about when they refer you a deal. And to go back to that point, what I did was once I determined that Jacksonville was the place I wanted to go to, I actually went on biggerpockets.com. I went on their forum and I just typed in, you know, subject line, what are the best places to invest in Jacksonville? Give me some zip codes, etc. And people on the forum are very, very friendly. They're willing to give you all this information and you can look at their signatures, like who are these people? And it turns out that most of the people who are going to give you this information are going to be property management companies and realtors. So right there, you already have people who are active in the real estate space who can help you buy properties. And so I just called them. Every single person that messaged me on that forum, I called them to see how they were. You know, even though 10 people might respond to your post, maybe 5 of them don't even pick up their phone.
Right.
So you know, they're not good at customer service. The other 5, some people may be talking about how beautiful the fences are. And I don't care how beautiful the fences are. I care about how the property performs. And out of those people, I just connected with one guy who I really resonated with. And he was able to answer all of my questions very patiently. I felt like this was a good person to work with. And then from there, he was able to refer me to a property management company. And the property management company referred me to construction people. And so it's like, you just have to have one really good person and then they'll connect you with all the other right people that you need for your team.
I love it, man. I love it. So that's networking and referrals, man. It's how you built your team.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, I want to kind of jump forward a little bit. How many properties do you now own in Jacksonville, if you don't mind me asking?
I currently own 6 units, 2 single families and 1 fourplex.
Awesome. And those perform pretty well for you?
Yeah, those are going pretty well. Even during this whole pandemic, we haven't had any issues in regards to our tenants not being able to pay rent. And I think that's because our property management team did a really good job at screening our tenants when they brought them in, making sure they had stable jobs and enough to cover their rent payments.
Man, that's a whole nother lesson in itself right there. We could talk about screening tenants and things, but I love what he's saying because all this stuff that you are, you know, you're talking about is so true and is so foundational to real estate. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're brand new to the game, you don't even have a deal yet, you need to be taking some massive notes because so far within this podcast, we could say that, hey, one, you need to be networking and building your team and using trustworthy referrals to do so. And then two, make sure you screen your tenants. Like these are notes you need to be writing down. Screen your tenants so that you prevent yourself from having long-term trouble. So I love it, man. So you started buying these properties in Jacksonville and you started building your team there. How did you get into the hard money side of this? Because you know now you're part hard money lender. You help people get finances for their flips and for their multifamily investments. How did you get that to that side of it?
Yeah. So like I said, I was actually an engineer for a while. I was working on satellites with Northrop Grumman, but I just didn't feel that passion that people should have for their career, right? And I actually left my full-time job as an engineer almost a year and a half ago and to do real estate full-time. But during that time, I actually had my podcast, I had my meetup group, which is growing, I have over 1,300 members right now, and my YouTube channel. And just by having this presence within the real estate community, it gives me some the thought leadership authority, where people will trust what I have to say. So if someone asked me, hey, do you have a hard money referral? I would go to a person I know and refer them business. And just by having that connection and continuously sending business over, one of my friends who does work in the hard money lending industry offered me the opportunity to work with them. You know, I use them for my own projects. I use that company to fund my hard money or to fund my flip projects with their hard money. And they're like, you're a good fit. You already refer us all this business. Why not work with us? And I said, okay. So that's why I've been with them since December of last year.
Awesome, man. That's cool. So let's dive into that. Let's kind of talk about hard money lenders, and just chat about pros and cons. All right, you obviously are for it, and I am too. So let's talk about things people need to know before they get into hard money, right? Because there's a lot of people out there, they're new to real estate and they don't know much about hard money lending. So let's jump right in. If you could, Sean, give our audience a quick breakdown of what hard money is and how they can use it in their business.
Yeah. So hard money loans are loans that are based on the hard asset itself. So it's based on the home, how well it is and how good it deals it, versus a traditional loan would look at your personal requirements. Like they'll see if you have enough income from your day job to pay for this property. Well, homes, even fixers here in the Bay Area, go for $800,000, right? Most people who have a full-time job and are making even $100,000 a year can't afford this $800,000 fixer. And especially if there's something wrong with the house, like there's no kitchen inside, then it's not going to be financeable through traditional means. So a hard money lender is able to go in and lend based on the value of the property itself. So that's like the key difference there. And these loans are going to be for business purposes only. So they're not going to be for your own house where you're going to live in it yourself.
Right. Makes sense. So I love the description there. It's really simple to understand. And so can anybody get a hard money loan, or what's that application look like? I know what it is for me, but I want you to kind of explain to the audience what's the application process look like for a hard money loan?
Sure. I mean, there are some requirements. Probably the biggest one is that we still do require credit score check. Credit score needs to be above 620. And we do need to see that you are either a citizen, permanent resident with a green card, or have a visa. And I mean, again, another important factor is that do you have the ability to finish the project? So we do not do 100% financing for our hard money loans. So we do want to see that you have enough money for the down payment, your construction costs, as well as for your interest payments. We want to see you have some reserve to pay 6 months worth of those interest payments.
Gotcha. So you have to have some kind of skin in the game, which I like. You want to have that. And so it's cool. And how much have you used hard money in your flipping and in your, buying rentals and stuff like that? Has it been 100% hard money?
When it comes to the flipping projects, yes, I've been using hard money.
And you do flipping
only
there
some certain
in the Bay
times.
Area?
Sorry, what?
You do flipping there in the Bay Area?
Exactly. Yeah. Flipping in Santa Clara County, which is where I live. And yeah, again, these are like $1 million plus price points. And I wish I did, but I don't have $1 million to just put down and purchase every property.
Right. I love it. So for those of you listening, if you're maybe in a tight spot, you don't have all the finances you need, or maybe you have some traditional loans already, on you, I guess you could say your history, and you can't necessarily get another loan, look at hard money lenders. I always recommend, I don't know about you, you can tell me if you agree with this or not. I always recommend for people, to have maybe a couple deals under their belt before they go with hard money. What's your thoughts on that?
We actually lend to people who have no experience.
Okay.
And hard money enables you to do the deal. So what I mean by that is hard money loans are more expensive than traditional loans. Like right now, a regular loan is like less than 3%, which is really, really good. So if you can, definitely go for the conforming loan. But the thing is, hard money allows people to get into deals where they can potentially make a lot of profit. So here in the Bay Area, most people who do flips are looking for 6 figures minimum per project. They want to make at least $100,000. And in my example, I was working a full-time job as an engineer, and I wasn't able to buy this property for $860,000. So by taking a hard money loan, I was able to do the deal. We sold it, and we ended up making $300,000 worth of profit. So that's kind of like where you have to think about. It's not that like loans are expensive, you shouldn't do it, but what does this loan enable you to do?
I love it. I love it, man. It's about getting creative and, you know, seeing what your situation holds. Right. So what are some things people need to know before getting hard money loans? Is there anything that you would suggest people do before they try to apply for one or maybe start considering one?
Yeah. I mean, definitely they should contact a hard money lender before they, you know, sign their name and go into a non-contingent offer. They should definitely talk to a hard money lender first and say, hey, is this a project that you would be willing to lend on? And just getting the green light before going forward. So if any of your listeners have any questions about hard money lending, they can feel free to call me and we can go through it first before they just put in a blind offer and banking on hard money loans to save them when it comes down to financing.
Right. A lot of times because those people, they'll end up getting it under contract and something goes wrong too late. And then they're scrambling to find financing. And I love it. Where do you guys fund at, if you don't mind me asking? Do you guys fund the whole, all 50 states or?
We fund 30 out of the 50.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. So, hey, listen, shoot Sean a message if you want. Shoot him an email. I'm sure we'll drop the link below so you can find out more about his hard money loan programs. But, you know, he may be a good fit for you. But so let's talk. I want to kind of transition. I know we were talking about hard money for a little bit. Let's talk about buying properties in a market like you're in, right? So I'm going to, this is interesting. This is more for me than probably the audience because where I live, houses are like, we buy houses between $50,000 and $100,000, right? So like very, very different. We're not looking at houses that are $800,000, $1 million. So what do you say is the major difference other than price? Is there any difference in the way you flip in those markets that are way higher?
Yeah. So as an example, my girlfriend recently bought a property in Texas and she was able to buy it for like, you know, $23,000 and then put another $20,000 into it to do a complete like renovation. It now looks updated. It now looks decent and you can rent it out for like $900 a month, but it's to like livable condition quality. Whereas for most flips here, since the potential is so high, people usually do these really nice HGTV looking finishes. It's very rare to see someone just update the house to livable condition. I think that's a major difference. So that means that our rehab costs are often going to be in the 80K range and above. So I'm not sure, like, what do you usually use for your flips over where you're at?
Yeah, it depends on, obviously, same way as you, it depends on the quality. But if we want to get like a nice, you know, a nice renovation, it could be 30 to 40, right? It just depends on what needs done to the property. But, you know, that gets good granite countertops, you know, stainless steel appliances, stuff like that. So,
yeah, I would love to do a 40,000 flip. It's just that most of our projects here cost a lot more than that.
Right. And so, wow, that's very interesting. And I never really even thought of that because of the higher price point. You know, there's a higher expectation on those flips. So this is just a question for me. What's the most expensive house you've sold? Like after you renovated and everything, what's the after repair value on those?
The most expensive one that I've done is $2.5 million. Okay. And interesting enough, that one, I didn't even have to buy it. We could tell the story if you want.
This go is, for it. Tell the whole story.
Yeah. So for this project, we got it. We sent it through a mailer. This lady lived in Texas and this was a rental for 9 years. The tenants moved out and the seller didn't want to do work herself and she didn't have the money to do any work herself. She just wanted to sell it. And for us, we thought that the ARV was going to be around $2.4 million. She wanted around $2.1 million for it. And we thought that the spread was a bit too thin, especially if you use hard money. Now, like you're making a lot for these monthly payments. We ended up working a deal where we would just partner with her. We would come in, do the work. She would pay us back for all the work plus a small consulting fee. And then we would split the difference 50-50 between $2.4 million and whatever ends up selling for. In that deal, we ended up partnering with our contractor. So now the contractor was able to do the job at cost, come in with half of the money. And I was also able to bring in the agent. And once you bring in an agent yourself, if you're licensed, now you can use referral. You get 25% of their commission. And you know, 25% of a commission on a $2.5 million house is a lot of money on top of that.
Yeah.
So basically we were just being very creative with the way that we did this particular deal. And we basically went into it with almost no risk, did the work for her. She was very happy when we sold it. We sold it for $100K above her expectation, split that 50-50. And then we had to put in even less money because we only had to put in half of the rehab budget, which ended up being around $100,000. So we only put in $50,000, and the grand total from our part was around $200,000. So it ended up being like a really, really solid deal based on the way we just creatively structured it.
And well,
it
was a lot of fun. I love that, man. You don't hear of many people doing that, I don't feel like. So let's dive into that, because some of the people may be so confused right now if they've never heard of someone doing this. Let's slow it down a little bit and let's break down exactly what you did in that deal, because this, guys, there's many different ways to make money in real estate, and being creative in these ways is exactly what you may need. So Sean, let's dive into that. So let's break it down step by step, exactly how you negotiated this and how you presented her this offer and what that looked like.
Yeah. So I mean, in the beginning, you present the cash offer and she wanted 2.1. We said we couldn't do it for above 1.9 million. So that right there was already no way we could bridge that gap. And then the other offer was, let's do the project and then pay you off in the back end. And she wasn't really cool doing seller financing. It seemed kind of sketch to her. So then finally we said, why don't we just partner with you? You own the property. You continue making your utility bill payments, your mortgage payments, and property tax payments. But we'll come in and we'll finance the rehab. So, you know, she's in Texas. She has her life. She doesn't want to spend $100,000+ to rehab her property from afar. We're local guys. We can do it for cheaper. She said, okay, we'll go with you. And our agreement was, after closing, you will pay us back what we spent on it, plus a small, you know, consulting fee.
So there's probably people listening. They're probably thinking, how do you protect yourself, right? How do you protect yourself from this lady not just letting you renovate it and then her selling it and not giving you any money? What's agreements did that look like?
You know, we actually had a JV agreement that we wrote up on Microsoft Word, and it may not have held up in court too well, but it's something there, you know, it's something there. And if she really wants to go to bat, I think we could slap a mechanics lien on her property. And mechanics lien is when you do work on someone's property and they don't pay you.
Right.
And in the clause too, in our JV agreement, we said, hey, what happens if the property looks so nice and she just doesn't want to sell anymore? Well, our clause says that you'll have to pay us X dollars plus some expected value and whatever. Like it's written there. So she knows.
Love it. So listen, this guy right here, he structured this. So she just keeps the property. They do the work. And then pretty much at the very end, they split the profits. That's creative, guys. So there's so many people that you're talking to on the phone and they just will not budge on the price, right? They will not come down from where they want to be on their price. Listen, offer the cash offer, offer seller financing, but then offer, you know, to go on, because a lot of these people, they want to be the Chip and Joanna Gaines, right? They want to be the fixer-upper people, but they just don't know how. They want to make money by flipping a house. That's like a lot of people's goals. They'd be like, oh, I'd love to do that one day, but they just can't. You can help them do that by getting creative like this. So I loved it. So that went smooth, man?
Yeah, it went really smooth and we're really happy. Like, I want to do more deals like that because your risk is lowered, right? You have almost no risk. She has so much equity in her home that for sure that like she'll be able to pay off her mortgage and all her other debts and so pay us back what we're owed.
So, right. Yeah. Love it, man. It's so crazy how you guys were able to do that. And, you know, for some of you guys, you're probably having a light bulb moment right now. You're probably like, what? You can do that? Yes, you can do that. It's crazy what you can do whenever you just get a little creative and stuff. So have you done any more since then, or no, was that the only one?
That was the only creative one like that. The other ones are typical where you buy it, you fix it and you sell it.
Right. So they're not, you know, going to be all the time out there, but they're there if you present it at the right time. So I love it, man. And so what tips would you give for anybody that is wanting to take up a strategy like that? Is there anything that you learned within that, you know, time frame, or anything that you would make sure people do in order to make that flip go successful if they were to partner with the seller?
Yeah, you really have to have a good connection with maybe a contracting team, so they're down to also do the job at cost and maybe split the cost of the rehab project as well. Because I feel like that's where we made our most gains, because we were able to reduce the amount of cost for our rehab project. And I think they should also read into some negotiating books. So I think a very popular one is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. It's a great book that came out around 2017, and all of us read it very religiously back then.
Right. Love it, man. Love it, dude. Well, hey, let's ask a little bit more questions about investing in these areas that are high cost, right? So you said that, you know, one of the main differences is the expectation of flip quality, which I love. Is there like a certain difficulty in finding properties because they are so high, if that makes sense? I don't know if that question makes sense or not.
The answer is yes. I think financing properties, like money, is not as hard as finding deals, especially here in the Bay Area. And that, again, it's because once you find a good one, you're looking at a six-figure paycheck. And for a lot of people, that's like their whole year's salary. So you can do one flip project instead of working for a whole year.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of the top investors that I've interviewed locally, they spend around $30,000 a month on direct mail.
Wow. You know? That's a lot of direct mail, you know, and
a lot of direct mail.
Yeah. So I would say the competition's high in your area.
I mean, yeah. If you get a good deal, it's very lucrative. Like the wholesale deals are also in the six-figure range as well, if you can believe it.
Yeah, actually, I have a few friends that actually wholesale in California, in near areas, not necessarily where you're at, but because, you know, they can spend, like they say, it may take a few grand to get a deal, but when they do, it's well worthwhile. So very interesting. So do you see yourself continue to flipping in that area, or do you feel like you will expand to another market, or what's that look like?
It's a good question. I actually got out of a deal that didn't go so smoothly just this past week. And I think for me personally, it's time to take a quick break. Maybe just wait till this little weird COVID situation is finished before I get into it. But I've definitely seen a lot of people, you know, especially on the hard money lending side, who have done deals and have been very successful with it. So the market is still very hot here in the Bay Area. And I think that, you know, we'll see what happens in early Q1 of 2021. But personally, I'm going to be focusing on my content creation stuff. So the podcast, YouTube videos, and making a great meetup group. And then I feel like once I'm ready to get back into it, I'll just leverage all the networks I've been building over the past few years to get back into it.
Right. So the rental side, I'm really curious, are you more of a single family rental guy, or are you more of a multifamily? What's that look like? If you would prefer one over the other, what would you choose? That's just a weird question I wanted to ask.
Yeah. You know, I started with single family and I quickly realized that multifamily is a little bit better simply because of the scale. I feel like if you were going to just buy and sell properties, like if I ever plan on selling my portfolio, it would be better if I had single families because they're more liquid. But because I'm holding on to my Jacksonville properties more so as like a passive cash flow, then I'd rather just have them all in one building rather than separated all throughout the city.
I love it. Love it, man. I always just like to ask weird questions like that to hear people's perceptions and people's, you know, preferences. So
I'm sure there's plenty of people who disagree with me. Yeah.
Yeah. There's tons of people that would disagree with you. Actually, I don't know. I seen an ad somewhere yesterday. I guess they're doing like a single family versus a multifamily battle. Like they're having like a debate thing, like, and just for fun, just to hear, you know, thoughts. But there's some people that are sold all on single family. There's people that are sold all on multifamily, and that's okay, right? Everybody has different goals. Everybody has different visions for what they want their business to look like. So don't let other people's opinions get in the way of what you want to do, right? If you want to do single family homes and do the BRRRR strategy, go for it. But if you want to get into multifamily like we're trying to do, cool. You know, whatever fits
you. I've interviewed probably over 200 people on my podcast over the past couple of years. And it seems that every strategy works. You know, you can be a pro at flipping houses anywhere in the country or do multifamily, syndication, whatever. It all works. It just depends on what you want to do. So I often tell people who come to my meetups, hey, what's the best real estate investing strategy? I tell them, imagine you didn't get any money. You wouldn't get paid for this at all. What would you enjoy doing? And that's probably what you should be focusing on.
Right. I love it, man. And sometimes it takes, I mean, I've talked about this many times before, but sometimes it takes trial and error, going in there and trying something. You're like, maybe I'm not a flipper, right? Or maybe, you know, that's not me. Maybe you just want a passive cash flow. You know, maybe that's your gig. Maybe you want to buy some multifamilies, you know, 12 units, 24 units, and just sit on the cash flow for a while. And while somebody else manages it, maybe that's you. So I feel like there's a trial and error thing. You know, you may find it right away, you know, after thinking and doing a lot of research, but then maybe you won't. Maybe you'll, you know, it takes a little while. So don't get discouraged if you jump in and like, man, this isn't for me. Just try other things. Try, you know, you may be a wholesaling guy. I know I have plenty of friends that wholesale for a living and they make really good money and they have fun doing it. So you know, just find what you like and dive deep into it. So I love it, man. And so this is always a weird question. I ask this on every episode. What is one passion you have outside of real estate?
Good question. So, I mean, I'm part of a bunch of other different groups. You know, I was doing Toastmasters for a while. So I liked being part of Toastmasters and giving out speeches. I go to the gym almost every day because like I really need it, man. Like during the COVID-19 shutdown, we couldn't go to the gym for almost 6 months. And it was really affecting my mental state. But they recently opened up again, so I feel really good now. I was also really interested in just trying a bunch of different stuff. So like I learned how to juggle, I learned how to do a backflip, you know, things like that.
That's awesome, man. That's cool. Yeah. You don't often see these sides of people whenever you see them on social media, whenever you hear them on podcasts. So I like always asking those questions, actually see the real side of them, people, I say. But that's cool, man. Yeah. Physical fitness is a big part. We actually just bought a fitness facility. I love buying businesses and stuff like that and building businesses. So we just bought one and dude, it's crazy what, you know, fitness and, you know, just a healthy lifestyle can do for people, especially in the business arena, man. I mean, like you said, you probably had a tough time mentally over the past 6 months, not being in that state of healthiness. Right. And so actually let's dive into that. That's kind of an avenue we didn't plan on going down, but how did that affect you not being active and, you know, not having that physical fitness for the 6 months, which you could do it at home, but not being in an environment where you could do that?
Yeah. I mean, I was always still good about doing a daily routine. I would do like 100 pushups, 100 squats and 100 sit-ups, but that's really not enough compared to going to the gym and getting a real good workout. And so every day I could feel myself getting like smaller and more emaciated. Is that even how you pronounce that word? Whatever, like emaciated. I felt smaller and skinnier every day. And my hair was growing longer too because barbershops weren't open either. So I just felt kind of like Tom Hanks in Castaway, just kind of moping around every day. Everything's the same.
Wilson. And
yeah, like I would force myself to go outside to take a walk, but it's just, I don't know, it's not the same. And I feel like when you go out and you work out, you get this endorphin rush, you feel more confident. And
yeah, and that's a big key about this business and, you know, well, anything in life is having that confidence. And if you don't have that and if you don't walk like, you know, you're it, you know, it's hard, man. It makes it hard to go out there and crush the day when you don't have that confidence. So that's what I love seeing from people is people go into the gym and finding themselves and finding, you know, feeling good again, you know, feeling like they used to and stuff like that. And it can change your life dramatically. And you know what? It takes discipline because you can go in there 1 or 2 days and not see a difference, but it takes being that consistent and being disciplined for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. And you know, usually it doesn't take but about 2 months until you start seeing a difference and others start noticing. But man, when you do, it could change your life and your business, just having that confidence.
You know, that's what I noticed too. Like, let's say real estate, you can do everything right and still not see the results you want. But at least with the gym, I feel like I have more control. Like as long as I keep going every day, as long as I do the same workouts, whether it's tougher, I can see the results over time. And it feels good. Like everything in my life can be going wrong, but at least I know that I'm feeling pretty good and fit at the gym.
Right. Well, maybe that's a challenge we should throw out to people this week is, hey, start your fitness journey again, right? Or maybe you, since COVID just kind of dropped out and you need to get back into things and, or maybe you've been doing it, but you need to step it up a bit. You've been just going on the treadmill and just walking. If you walk, awesome. I'm not saying don't do that, but maybe you just need a little extra motivation to start taking your life to that next level. Hey, let's challenge you guys to get back into the gym and start living a life with purpose and feeling better about yourself and, you know, just boosting your self-confidence through your fitness journey. Because I want to see, maybe it won't help you, but I can almost guarantee it. Me and Sean can almost guarantee that you're going to see a difference. You're going to feel a lot better by doing so. But yeah, man, thanks for being transparent and for sharing people. You know, you dealt with that. You dealt with some stuff during, you know, being shut down. So other than seeing your physical, you know, body, you said you felt like you were getting smaller and you probably just felt weaker. Was there anything mental wise from going in an environment where you're working out all the time to not being in that environment?
No, I would say that's probably the biggest difference. It's just that, you know, every day things are the same. In the real estate side too, like I wasn't doing any new deals during this COVID-19 situation, but I was still going on podcasts. I was still making videos.
So you were still surrounding yourself, even though you were in the journey though, he was still creating an environment of growth.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah. A lot of people see, They don't do that. And so, you know, it's interesting to see how people create their own environments. And it sounds so cheesy, everything we're talking about. It sounds so cliche, right? But it's true. Creating your environment for growth is so important. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, guys, thank you, Sean, for being on, man. Again, if you guys want to connect with Sean and everything he does hard money lending wise, or maybe you just want to get connected with some of his real estate content that he has on Instagram, YouTube, and any other sites he has, his website, his podcast. Listen, there's going to be links below in this podcast you can click on, and you can go there and follow him. You can go there and check out all his content you need to start finding out about everything real estate, everything REI. So make sure you go check out his podcast, because he has, like you said, he's interviewed over 200 people, right? Mm-hmm. Over 200 people, and you're going to find wisdom in that podcast. So make sure you go in there, check out what he's doing. And you know what? Leave us a review as well. If you found value in this podcast, if you loved what we're doing every week, every Tuesday here on the Real Estate Success Strategies podcast, feel free to leave a review for us. Let us know that so we can actually see what we're doing matters. It just, one, it makes us feel really good that we're actually doing something purposeful. Then it also lets us know, hey, this is what they like and what they don't like. So I appreciate you all, Sean. Thank you so much, man, for coming on. I appreciate it. Any last words of wisdom for these people?
Yeah. If you're interested in getting started with anything related to real estate investing, do what people told me to do. Join your local networking groups. I think that would be very, very helpful for you. And right now, because it's virtual, you can basically join them all across the country. If you guys want, you can even join my meetup group at meetup.com/everythingREI.
Love it, man. Love it. So go join his meetup, guys. It'll be worth it. Sean, thank you, man. Guys, we will see you next week for another episode on the Real Estate Success Strategies podcast. If you need anything, holler at me, and we'll see you sometime soon. God bless.